This is tape one of an interview between Karen Duder, and the date is the 29th of May, 1998. Can I ask you when and where you were born?
I was born in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
And how long did you live there?
Only 3 years. Then the family moved to New Westminster, then to Burnaby, then to Edmonton.
Was that for reasons of your father's occupation?
Yes, yes. He was a grain buyer, then had a health problem. My parents were older and moved around.
How can you remember more or less how old they were when you were born?
My father was 40 and my mother was 33. And I was one of triplets. One died at birth. Then I have a twin brother.
Were you the only two children then?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Yes. So had they been married long when you were
no.
born?
No, they met. It was the end of the Depression. Neither had been married before. And they apparently decided, will we have a child, will we not? Actually, neither one is very fond of children, not then, not now. But they finally decided, well, maybe one child. And then to discover that she was carrying triplets, I don't think my mother ever got over it.
Wow. So you had one brother, right? And you said it was at the end of the Depression. Were they then poor, or what sort of financial status did they have?
Both were working. Both had a drive to get ahead, particularly my mother, and decided they would never go into debt of any kind. Later on, they bought a house. I thought we were terribly poor as we were growing up, and I didn't realize that they were saving to buy a house, never mind the mortgage. Mm. So, but certainly we always had food and clothes.
Right.
And in those days, to have two working parents wasn't all that usual. In fact, my mother was quite looked down on, particularly the years she took a job away from where my father and brother and I lived. And she'd be home for maybe a day and a half at the weekend and be gone again.
I was going to ask if she had worked before marriage. So she had worked for quite a while.
She was a teacher. She worked from age 17 or 18.
And you said she was looked down on.
Yes. Did
she ever talk about what kind of comments or reactions she got specifically for working?
Only that she said, I like my work. I don't like being with children. ironically, she was a teacher. She never got to know neighbors. So I would hear, for example, a couple of the years that she lived out of town, was only home a day and a half at the weekend. The family next door, which did have a girl about my age, decided I was not to spend any time or play with this girl because I was unsupervised and came from a family that was not approved of. And since we lived, I think I figured out 18 different places before the house was finally bought when I was 12, the family really didn't have close connections to anybody. You worked, and that was that.
Right. So did you have to do chores around the house?
Yes, at least minimally. Mm-hmm. Yes. I would come home from school and start supper because mother wasn't there, and father worked until 6 and got home about 6:30. And my brother was always interested in sports and was out and about.
So he didn't do much in the
room. No,
right.
Not interested.
Okay. Would you say that your childhood was enjoyable?
No. I wouldn't go back there for anything. I think I'm still getting over some of the effects of what it was like. I still remember yearning to be older or had a... Oh, from the time I first remember anything, age about 3, I had a fantasy that I would die and be reborn in another family. Or, sounds terrible, that something would happen to my parents. I mean, they were always away, so they wouldn't come back, and I'd get another family. Isn't that terrible? But I remember it clearly as a preschooler thinking that, and then it just went on all through my school years.
What was it that you didn't like, do you think?
almost total absence of interaction. Mm. I only received praise if I was silent and not trying to interact at all with either one of them.
So would I be correct in assuming that your parents were from the children should be seen and not heard school?
Absolutely. And maybe because they were older, and you know, I don't criticize them because they had their needs, and their needs were to get on with their lives and to have as little as possible to do with the two children who were accompanying them through that part of their life. Mm. But certainly they cared about our well-being, and we had food and clothes and went to school. But for whatever reason, neither one was able to give anything in terms of play or and they to go on any sort of event, picnics and all that sort of thing. It just didn't happen. Hmm. That just wasn't what life was about for them.
Who did you play with then?
I read. I didn't have playmates until we finally bought the house, but by then I was 12. It was about 2 miles from University High School in Edmonton, and there were another two girls who would walk also, and that's when I first had friends. Hmm. With one brief exception, I remember now a friend called Carol about 2 years earlier, where we lived in one place long enough that I walked to school with Carol and got to know her. But again, she, after not too long, was not permitted to visit me, to be with me.
Now, one of my questions in the past has been if there were any children in the neighborhood that you were not definitely not allowed to play with, but it sounds as if for you that it might have been the other way around. Were there any other families who are clearly disapproved of that your parents also disapproved of?
They didn't get to know families, and we moved so much so often. I thought it was for reasons of work or just to get a better place or a more convenient place. But then after my father died, my mother was on her own, she'd move from one apartment to another at least once a year. This is just something she likes to do, is move. So I think it might have happened anyway. And neither one ever developed ties with a community, with neighbors. To my knowledge, neither one ever belonged to a club, church, or organization of any sort whatsoever. So in that way, I guess it was isolating and quite unusual. Hmm. But it was definitely their choice.
Even though they didn't belong to a church, were they nevertheless religious people?
No, not in the slightest. In fact, my father would say such things as religion is for people who don't know any better. And my mother, I guess, had boarded when she was 17 or 18 with a minister and his wife, and said to me, she remembers the man pounding on his wife's door and she wouldn't let him in. And that was how I learned about sex. She said, you know, there's some duties involved if a woman marries, but mostly it turns out like this. And this is what ministers and churches are about. And but mind you, that was just one conversation. I don't think she ever spoke about it again. When I was first married, under some protest, it was in a church. By then, I had joined the Anglican Church. She attended the wedding, but let it be known that she really considered whether or not she'd walk into the church to attend my wedding. Mm. And she didn't grow up in a church, so I don't know why there was such negativity, but there was.
Did you go to Sunday school as a child then, or?
On Sunday morning, when we lived close enough to a church I could walk to, I guess it was a good way that I wasn't around on Sunday morning. But I attended, and we were renting a place just a couple of blocks from a United Church. And of course, I really liked it. I liked anything where there was something with interaction and other people. And then I started going to the services also. I was 9 or 10 then, and I liked it a lot.
So did you feel yourself to have any connection to religion besides that social aspect? Or did you feel like your parents or you felt?
Oh, no, I think I was probably a changeling of some kind. because from very early times, I would remember, for instance, my mother was once teaching in an out-of-town school where there was a teacherage right on the rolling hills, not far from Edmonton. And I remember standing there on the roadway in the fall and looking at the wheat and the wind going through the wheat, the sky and the trees, and feeling that mystic sense of oneness, which is still the basis of my religious belief. Nothing to do with creed, everything to do with the sense of microcosm in macrocosm and the mysterious connection of the one to the all. Mm. I guess I was 8 or 9 that fall. And basically, I have been the same person ever since.
Did you ever discuss those feelings with them? Or
I remember trying, because it was such a sort of the earth is moving moment. And it just a blank stare of incomprehension and then something about, go wash your hands for supper or something. I don't want to be so critical and down-putting, but there was absolutely no encouragement whatsoever to follow that path. And when I became a teenager, started to go to a church, joined the church, I was more or less told that I was being stupid, and if I chose to do that, that was up to me, but don't get them involved. So I didn't ever discuss religion with either one of them.
But you did eventually find a community.
Yes. Mm. I think I probably sought community from the time I realized there was such a thing. Whereas my brother went the other way and became isolated.
Talking about those years of adolescence for a moment, can you remember, I mean, I don't know when that conversation with your mother about sex occurred, but were you given any information that prepared you for being a young woman?
I remember at the time the people who manufacture Kotex had a little booklet. I was given the booklet. Then I began to menstruate very early. I had just turned 11. Mm. And I knew what it was, and yet I was startled. And that was a weekend that my mother was home. And I remember she said to my father something about, is sick for the first time. That I remember the word sick very clearly. Now we'll have to put up with that every month. I guess you'd better drive me to the drugstore so we can get what she needs. Mother didn't ever drive. And that was it. That was all that was ever spoken of.
So nothing about nothing about reproduction or anything like that.
No, but by then I was reading anything, everything. So I knew a lot, but all of it came from books.
What kind of books did you get access to? Can you remember some of the...
Anything in the Strathcona branch of the Edmonton Public Library. And, of course, any novel that had, in those days... there were at least some sex scenes, and of course I read that along with everything else. I was a print addict from a very early age.
Did you ever get hold of any of the books? Now, if you were born in, well, no, they were in reprint then. The books by Marie Stopes, the British birth control activist?
No, or didn't.
They were all kind of still... under the table stuff
I
a little bit.
I probably would have had to ask the librarian, and that since I didn't know they existed, that didn't happen.
She had one in the Eaton's catalog, I think, in 1936.
Really?
But there was a little bit of information out there. Did you also talk to girlfriends about this stuff? Did you?
Well, you see, apart from Carol, and that was a short friendship, I had no girlfriends till I was 12, because we live here a bit, live there a bit. Sometimes I lived with my father. Mother worked out of town. Other times my mother would take a job in a one-room school, and we'd live on the second floor of a farmhouse or in a teacherage. But I didn't have girlfriends.
Those years after 12, those the two girls you got to know when you were 12, did they become long-term friends?
Yes. Mm. Yes, they did.
For what sort of period of time?
The one I'm just in casual contact with now, and it's been that way ever since I openly told her I was a lesbian. The other one looks on that part of my life somewhat askance, but on the other hand, she's still in quite close touch and looks on me as a friend and still tells me a lot about her life and sees me once a year or so when they travel through Kelowna. So a very long-term friendship.
Yeah. Hmm. So you've used the word lesbian to identify yourself.
Strange. I've never liked the sound of the word. I'm very closely attuned to words. I like the cadence, the sound of some, not so much of others. Words are my music. And I prefer to call myself a gay woman.
Okay. When do you think you had your first conscious sense of that, that you were a gay woman?
From the time I was 5 or 6, any woman who was in my life, even briefly as a teacher, the librarian, I would develop these great crushes on, great passions. But at the time, I really think up until 11 or 12, it was a matter of looking for a mother figure, because these were all women of an age they could have been a mother, and there basically wasn't a mother in my life. But still, I certainly didn't look to people, to males. So I'm not quite sure how to quantify that, but certainly there was an attraction very early on.
What did it feel like? Can you remember what, if you had to describe exactly how that felt to have a crush, what would be the words you'd use?
Intensity, obsessive thoughts. Okay, I could explain it more clearly for the first time that it really took over my life. There was a teacher called Miss Mason who taught English and socials from grades 7 to 9. This is when we had bought the house and I had skipped a grade or two and I was still 11 when I started grade 7. So she was in my life for 3 years and this was my first big crush. And for 3 years, my passion was that someday she'd put her arm around me and I'd have a hug and even a kiss from Miss Mason. I would get to school quite early, and because it was a small school, we would see a lot of her. She was homeroom teacher, she taught the English and she taught the socials and was very involved. And at the time she was still single. She was probably in her 30s then. And we would sort of walk her partway home. She lived not far from the school. And I know that my friend Marilyn, also Anne, that I sort of dragged them into this close connection because I was so intense and was sort of the leader. And even by that point, I was writing some of their homework papers for them, and they rather appreciated that. Not that they weren't perfectly capable of writing their own, but Denise was always the academic star, you see. And maybe they got sort of caught up in this game, too, that... the game of choosing just the right Christmas and birthday gift for Miss Mason, and how much would she tell us about her life, and on it would go.
Hmm. Do you think that they shared your intensity of feeling, or do you think that yours was different?
Oh, mine was different. I have no doubt at all. For the two of them, it was just something interesting because... she was an attractive personality and young enough to be, for them, perhaps almost much older sister or even aunt. So that was fine, and it was something to do in those days before they were dating. When I went into high school after grade 9 and I was 13, then it became Miss Milbrat, who again was teaching English and history and so forth. And at that point, Marilyn and Anne had left me in all this, and Miss Milbrat was strictly my passion.
Mm. And how long was that How long did you, were you with her for?
3 years again. And again, a small high school, so I had a lot to do with her. Actually, I think both of those women realized that there wasn't a mother or sister really in my life. I don't think either one of them approved of the fact, and they realized that, I didn't have family. We didn't ever live in the same city as any blood relatives, so there weren't aunts, uncles, grandparents, any of those things either. So perhaps, and certainly I did enough of that when I was a teacher, there were always the students who would be at my desk, no matter how early I got to school, who'd be an extension of my right elbow, you know. And I hope I was able for some of them, not that it was an attraction to a woman, but just to be a friend and a stable, steady, interested person who cared about them and wanted to hear about what they were thinking. And I was the safe person to talk with. So maybe remembering my own need for some sort of interaction with Miss Mason, Miss Milbrett, prepared me for the 20 years that to some extent I gave that to, oh, I don't know, over the 20 years I taught, probably to 50, 60 students, some of whom are still in touch.
Do you think either of those teachers ever suspected that there was more to your relationship with them than...
Oh, I think so. Once in a while they would say, oh, don't be so intense. Or once I was in high school and a young man called Les who'd come back to school, and he was 20, very bright, going on to be a lawyer, and decided that as his companion he'd choose someone he could talk to, and it happened to be me. And they tried to encourage this so-called romance. And then I do remember one other statement my mother made, maybe the only thing she ever said. I guess I said something about Miss Milbrett, or, you know, it was her birthday and I was taking her a gift. And my mother said something about, you should be thinking about a gift for Les. People will think you're queer if you keep talking about Miss Milbrett. So it must have been a little bit obvious.
So she must have been doing some reading. Because I was going to ask at what point you became aware of some of the words that identified.
Now, I'm not positive she used the word queer. She might have said that something about that you care about a woman, but, but you're not normal or something like that. She wouldn't have done any reading. For one thing, there weren't books in our house, and she didn't go to the library. She did nothing but work.
No women's magazines like Chatelaine or Maclean's, for example?
I would read those at the library. I think for a year or so she subscribed to Chatelaine. But they didn't believe in spending money on those things.
Did the relationship with, was it Les, did that ever blossom into anything else?
Certainly not sexually, but he asked me to marry him both the end of that year before he went off to UBC, and then 2 years later when he came back from UBC. But I still remember, and I have a picture, a street photographer in Edmonton took the picture. I was holding hands with Les, who was tall and good-looking, and we had been to a movie. And I remember so clearly what it felt like inside. I mean, I was the envy, for once, of other girls. Here I was, a sort of toothpick of a person. The only interesting thing about me could possibly be, you know, my mind, or that I could really talk with Les, and we were in the debating society and won everything and all this kind of thing. But, you know, here I was actually somewhat honored by the others, but that empty feeling inside, empty almost to the point of pain, where I'd get home from having gone out with him. And we went out somewhere every Saturday night, and we'd be invited to gatherings and things. And thinking, you know, how can this be? And it was literally pain inside. I thought, you know, is it that he's the wrong person? I'd have left him in a flash for Miss Milbrett or my piano teacher, or, you know, there were others I had met at this point. They were the people I wanted to spend time with, and yet there were so many societal rewards for going out with a man of any sort, and if he happened to be tall, handsome, and obviously a great future ahead, all the more. But inside, well, I was heading toward my first breakdown anyway, and I know that experience exacerbated it. Why wasn't I happy? And the same thing went on. I started university that fall. Les went off to UBC. There was always a young man, usually one quite a bit older. I got involved with a student newspaper on the campus at U of A and promptly started dating a master's student who was co-editing the paper. And it went on from there. Always these older, well, in those days, only slightly older people. And yes, I had, quote, dates. And this sounds strange, but maybe because I was somewhat cool and not taking over their lives and doing all these sort of feminine wilds thing, every single one of them asked me to stay in their lives and even marry them. And, you know, the notches on my belt were the proposals. But I knew I absolutely possibly could not marry any of those persons until after my fourth year of university. I was working in Banff for the summer, met a young med student who was gentle, sensitive, could talk about things instead of being the very sort of male person that I had dated up till then. And that was a little bit easier. And I thought, oh, well, maybe it's Duncan. I accepted an engagement ring and 2 months later had a complete breakdown, hospitalized first for tachycardia, thought I had a heart condition, and then it was simply extreme anxiety. I'd stopped eating, stopped sleeping at that point, and gave back the engagement ring and fell desperately, incredibly in love with the woman psychiatrist. And I have since learned that she's a gay woman, but the kind who is repressed. I spoke with the woman who lives with her now, got to know her and under other circumstances when I was 50, and learned that the most that, I know you delete these names, the most ever allowed with her partner, her live-in partner, was to hold hands while sitting on the couch. But no question at all that she was gay. And I loved her desperately all the years that she was involved with my care. And I went on to, I started teaching when I was still 20, had my degree. And she was involved in my care over a period of about 4 years. Mm-hmm. Never, ever, ever would talk about sexuality. I think now it was almost malpractice. Mm-hmm. I know she knew. She wouldn't even talk about the fact that I was obviously so in love with her. There you are. Internalized homophobia in the older people who are themselves gay.
Well, because that would have been in the late 50s, early 60s.
That's right.
Right,
mm-hmm.
Right at the time of some of the most poisonous,
yes,
psychological stuff about homosexuality.
58 to 61.
Right.
In Edmonton.
Did you ever explore any of these feelings towards women at that point in your life in any kind of physical way, whether that be sort of cuddling and kissing or anything more than that?
Yes, very early on. And looking back, this is interesting. I know that even though I'm in most ways a quiet person, I know I'm intense and I tend to be strong in a relationship unless I'm with a strong person. This is what's so marvelous about my partner, Janice. We're equally strong and neither one of us has to take the lead because we both do. When I was 10, the friend Carol that I mentioned, I somehow persuaded her that, you know, a bit of experimentation and cuddling. I guess I was so desperate for touch of any kind. So I'm not sure if this would have happened had I not been so desperate for touch. But I remember some cuddling and then, you know, the sleepover at those years. But I guess she did go home and tell her mother something about that. And that's when it was forbidden that I even speak to Carol, let alone ever have her over or even be a friend. So Carol was out of my life.
Mm.
And then Marilyn, who lived just across the street, there was some sort of experimentation, but always under the guise of, because she's totally heterosexual. Now, what would this feel like? And what do you think it will be like when? So that went on, really, through our teen years off and on. She permitted a bit of it. And once, when we were in our 40s, talked about it a bit, she said, you know, if you weren't such a strong personality, I never would have let that happen. But at the time, it seemed sort of okay. But she was in her late teens when she met the med student she later married. And so, you know, that was the end of that. She married him while still very young. But there was that bit of...
Can I ask, and I do want to say that if there are any questions that I ask that you find offensive, please just don't answer them. That's absolutely fine. What specifically did you get up to in those teenage years? When you say experimentation, what kinds of physical affection are you talking about?
Well, I became aware very early on. I don't think I was much past 10 when I learned about masturbation. I would never say the word, and this was my secret. Even now it's hard to say the word. Isn't that strange? So I was very aware of how my body worked, and I knew how I craved touch, any kind of touch. But I know with Carol, it was just, oh, let's sleep without our pajamas, you know, just the cuddling. And at that point, neither one of us even had any breasts at all, though I never did, but that's beside the point. But there was some touching, and, you know, what would it be like to kiss a boy? Mm. But I realized even then that I was using words and taking the lead. So there was a bit of kissing, a bit of fondling. Mm. With Marilyn, it became more than that. I think she was interested in how her body worked, and yet was quite repressed, and she's a very mild personality even now, and wouldn't have experimented on her own, and I think was quite pleased to have somebody teach her how her body worked.
Mm. Mm.
But always thought, you know, this is preparing for real life with a man, and for her it was.
Right. Had you discovered masturbation simply through play, or were you aware of attitudes about it?
I wasn't aware of any attitudes. I discovered it through play. I'm trying to think. Or just such a skin hunger or a hunger for touch of any kind that to touch myself, you know, I can remember just sort of stroking my own hand, just to have the experience of touch of any kind from anybody. And if it had to be myself, that's how it was. I might not have discovered it so early had I not been in an unusual situation. I mean, there wasn't even a grandparent whose lap I could sit in or an aunt whose hand I could take. There was simply zero touch in my life.
Did that in any way make your connection to those girls different or stronger, or how important a part of it was of the relationship with them was that to you, do you think?
Well, with Carol it was so brief, a matter of weeks. With Marilyn it went on for years. It was very important to me, particularly because she was in no sense a soulmate, even as a girlfriend. But she did live across the street, and we were sort of, she was permitted to spend a lot of time with me. Her only sibling was a very retarded sister. So, you know, isn't this nice? Marilyn has someone to be with, and Marilyn's a much better student now because She's with Denise, and Denise is so studious and gets all the high marks, and, you know, on and on it goes. So for me, that was probably my only real connection with Marilyn, was the fact that sometimes there was some physical connection. Her family would rent a cottage at the lake, and I would be invited out. I know her family felt sorry for me and strongly disapproved that there was rarely an adult, let alone a mother, in my home, and that I was there alone nine-tenths of the time if I weren't at school. And so they would invite me to come along. Well, the way the summer cottage is set up, I shared a bed in a room with Marilyn for a week, and that went on several summers in our mid-teens. Well, early teens, actually. By mid-teens, I was working. I would take a summer job.
When Carol told her mother, did the restriction, I guess the banning of you from Carol's life, did that come via Carol, or did Carol's mother contact your parents?
Carol's mother contacted me. It might have been because it was so hard to reach either one of my parents, or because I don't think they'd even met my parents. They just knew that this wasn't a usual family. So I had a call from Carol's mother, not with any explanation, just saying, for good reason, I don't wish you to speak with Carol again, and she most certainly cannot stay at your house, and I prefer you ignore her at school also. Well, we moved a couple of months later, so it wasn't an issue.
And the same thing didn't happen with Marilyn, that she didn't tell anybody?
No, she didn't. Well, I just... You know, she was older by then, and I think she just looked on it as her teenage experimentation, getting ready to meet and marry someone, which is exactly the way it turned out. Oh, no, she would never have dreamed of saying anything to her parents.
Right. What about those relationships with young men? Did you also explore any physical affection with them?
Only in terms of cuddling, or a, you know, certain amount of kissing and so forth, until I was in university, where it went to, I guess, what you call light petting. But I had absolutely no drive for it to go any further, and I permitted it only because the closeness was gratifying and appealing, and I hadn't had any closeness in my life. But always, though not so extremely as with Les, it was a little better if it was with someone I could actually talk to and someone who was a little more sensitive instead of being quite macho. But always that sense of emptiness, you know. I guess I had always fantasized that when I was older and in a relationship and away from the house I lived in, closeness could be part of my life and affection. And then to realize that that's how it felt to be with someone. And the only thing that promised joy was unthinkable, because certainly neither Miss Mason nor Elfrida was about to adopt me, which was a fantasy that I could just be with them always. And I hadn't by that point fallen in love with a peer. That though that did happen after my third year of university, when I went off to Quebec to take a French immersion course for 6 weeks, fell in love with a young woman from Newfoundland. And when I expressed something that was warm, not even quite realizing it, it came unconsciously from the depths of me somewhere, something to the effect of, you know, I want to be with you, I think I could love you. Well, she was an Irish Catholic and looked at me with horror and spent no more time with me the rest of that summer. That was the first time I was aware that I could love someone who wasn't a mother replacement of some sort. Mm.
Was that after you had had the 4 years with that psychiatrist? Or
that was before.
That was before.
Just before. Mm. Just before.
Mm. What? How would you have described your personality back then?
I was told I was intense. I had such a drive to connect with a community, with people. I knew that. I was bookish and scholarly. I was editor of the high school paper. I took piano lessons. I'm not musical, but it was something to do. And besides, I fell in love with a piano teacher. And it was a way of filling the day when I would come home from school and there'd be nobody there. I'd practice for 2 hours. So I have grade 10 piano with first class honors. Did it all with my head, not with an innate musicality, because I don't have it. I used to keep journals and write, and mostly I read everything in print. And had, ludicrous averages even in things like physics and math, because I was so disciplined and organized. Mm. You know, I'd have an average of 95 in physics and math, and I have no innate understanding of those subjects. It's English, it's words, it's ideas, metaphors, concepts. That's where I swim freely. Mm. But the other stuff, I could memorize like a whiz, and I did. So I was always tired because I was always doing too much in that sense. Mm. It was a way, I guess, of filling the hours and trying to connect.
Some of your reading was non-academic, though, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I loved novels to do with England. Mm. Isn't it a marvel? Here my life partner is from England, and I can hear that wonderful accent. And it's Elizabeth Gouge come to life, But I read, I think, every English novelist that was ever shelved on a public library shelf in Edmonton from age about 8 or 9 on.
Would you have considered your reading to be, I don't know what the phrase would be, age appropriate, or were you reading beyond your years?
Oh, far beyond my years. Far beyond my years. I was reading to put myself into a world where I'd love to be. The world of an English country village, or the extended family, and follow them, if it was a serial, through all of the events of their lives. It was trying to make myself part of that family by reading about it.
Did you spend a lot of time when you were younger on the I guess they're sort of English schoolgirl stories where intense relationships between...
Yes.
Can you remember any of them in particular?
I wish I could remember by title. What was the one about the girl who finally ended up in boarding school and just loved it? There was a whole series of titles. I'd have to get back to you if any of those titles can come to me. Mm. But, read them all. Wished I could go to boarding school.
Did you have any sense of identification with particular types of character or...
Oh, yes. All the girls who had the crushes on the gym mistress and the English mistress and with one another. Oh, sure, I did. Mm. Wished I lived in England and were part of their world.
In your reading at the library, did you ever chance upon any novels with any lesbian content in them?
Oh, I wish. No, I didn't. When I discovered Jane Rule, that was my very first reading, when there were lesbian characters and the lesbian life. Mm. But my goodness, I must have been 30 at the time, 33. Mother of 2 children, married and divorced. Mm.
Now, you said you kept a journal when you were growing up. What kinds of things did you write in it?
Most of it a chronicle of what was happening in my life. I would be very careful to hide it because I would include some of the fantasies that suddenly I would be an orphan and would be attached to another family or would be sent to a boarding school and all this kind of thing. I kept them for some years. I used to read parts of them to Marilyn, and Marilyn always said that would I please will her the journals. They're long since burned. But it was just a way of connecting, I guess.
Did you ever write anything in there about your feelings for for other women?
Yes, in code, I wrote about my attachment to Miss Mason, to the piano teacher, to the librarian, to Elfrida through the years of high school.
How did you code it?
Initials. What did I do after that? Because the content couldn't be coded. I guess I just used initials, and that's as far as I got with code.
So perhaps anybody who did read them might have thought you were talking about a young man?
Yes, yes, they might have done. But those are long since gone.
Did you discuss in those journals any of your physical exploration of those feelings?
No, I didn't do that. I was well tutored by the society I lived in, by the times, by the home I lived in, that all of this was totally beyond the pale. So no, I didn't.
Can you remember how you got that sense? Was it that you heard specific things said, or was it more general than that? That you picked up the idea that it was a bad thing?
Certainly that sex was a bad thing, and that any experimentation before marriage was unthinkable. I remember almost the shunning of a young woman, graduated from university, became engaged to a fellow. They were married, and 7 months later, the baby was born. And the neighborhood where we all lived literally shunned this woman because obviously she had had sex before marriage, and why couldn't she wait? I mean, it was that bad. And as to the possibility that two women or two men could be together, it was never talked of. It was just something that didn't exist.
So you never knew anybody in your neighborhood who was targeted because of that?
No.
Right.
No.
Were you aware in the late 50s and the early 60s of any of the, feel like the purging of especially gay men, but also some women from the civil service? Or did that make the public sort of headlines?
I also became a newspaper addict at about age 7 or 8. So I read everything, even the classifieds, though the Edmonton Journal wasn't very thick in those years. So any mention I would have read, but because there was never a face to go with it, never anyone in any context in which I moved, it didn't make me realize that these were my people. I think if I had met even one person who could have role modeled, an older person, a peer, anyone, even if I had had someone in the family, an aunt, an uncle, a cousin, if there had been any connection whatsoever, I think that's all it would have taken for me to lead a totally different life. But not even to know that it existed. You know, I'm also an ornithologist, a birder. The analogy that comes to mind is if it would have been like being the only feathered creature with wings among the mammals, you know? If you don't know there's another one that can fly and has feathers, then where do you go with that? How do you know who you are? Because we see ourselves in part reflected back through the eyes of others in the words of others, you know, the mirror of others. And if there's never any of that to reflect ourselves back to ourselves, then it stays inside.
How did you, in that kind of situation, how did you explain your feelings to yourself? How did you account for them?
I couldn't explain them to myself. I know I was engaged twice before I married a young man who had a fair bit of the feminine in him, was a bit younger than I, was a music student and went into teaching music. And I thought, you know, maybe this will work. Strangely, this used to affect my stomach. I literally would become nauseous after a certain point of being with any of the other men that I spent time dating. And I could hardly believe it. With Douglas, you know, it didn't happen. Oh, you know, I've been out with him 3 times, and he's kissed me. And my stomach doesn't start to contract. I'm not nauseous. Maybe this will work. And it was, you know, I don't know why this happened with me. I wonder if because I was almost like a blank slate to the other men, very quickly they decided this is someone they wanted to be with and could be with. I think we only dated twice when Douglas said to me, I want to marry you. Let's skip over all this dating stuff and let's just get married. Well, it was 4 months later when we married, but I kept sort of waiting for the nausea to begin, the contraction of my stomach. And I thought, oh, you know, maybe I'd better marry Douglas. I know I want someone in my life. And for once, I'm not physically in a sort of autonomic nervous system way in a situation where I have to break off seeing this person. I mean, I have to because I'm screaming inside. I thought, I better go with this. What else is there going to be? Ironic, I was 21, and I was already being told, because it was obvious I'd go with a perfectly suitable person, an engineer, a med student, you name it, and then break off. Oh, you know, you're going to be an old maid. You'll never be with anyone. Hmm. And then there was the kicker in all this. I desperately wanted to have a baby. I was a very girly girl. I loved dolls. I loved dollhouses. I'd spent a lot of time fantasizing about what it would be like to have my own sort of live doll. I really wanted a baby. Well, this means in the late 50s, early 60s, you have to get married. And I think now I could have had a woman partner and adopted a child or become pregnant myself. It turned out, I guess I was built for pregnancy, sailed through 9 months, looked and felt healthier than at any other time, had 4 hours of quick, easy labor, and here's a perfect child. I mean, I did this twice. I could have probably been like my maternal grandmother who did it 17 times. I probably was built, even though I looked, particularly back in those days, under 100 pounds, looked somewhat toothpick-like. I was built to bear children. When I think I could have had all that with a woman partner. But the best I could do then was a gentle, easygoing, bright young man who read, and it seemed could be somewhat led by me and wanted to be with me. Mm. Well, it looked just fine. Mm-hmm. So I married him.
And that was when you were 21?
Yes.
Right.
He was 20. Mm. And a year and a half later, my son was born. I had... Yes, I was 21. And we were married a year. Then I taught through my pregnancy. So I had 3 full years of teaching before I stayed home with my small son.
Right.
And almost 2 years later, my daughter. But then as the years went on, I don't know if I'm skipping over too much too quickly, but as the years went on, I realized that, you know, yes, Douglas was all right, and we could talk about some things, but it just wasn't there. There was nothing remotely approaching the depth of and intensity of the feeling I had had for women. We were connected with the Anglican Church, attended a summer camp, and of course I fell in love with a woman who was one of the people running the summer camp. And it was not just a camp, there were courses and so forth. And I realized that within a week, the intensity of my feeling for her far outstripped anything I had ever felt for Douglas. Mm. And Douglas, who was a follower, and I knew it when he married me, and was a follower later on in his life, became involved on a teaching staff with the 60s phenomena, the Beatles, and then with drugs. He got in with another teacher, and within the space of a year was into LSD, mescaline, grass hash, you name it. It was not only used, our house was sort of the focal point. I instinctively knew it would put me over the edge, and I had no interest. It was not my scene. But it was Douglas's scene, and he scrambled his mind so completely. By the end of that year, he said, well, you better go to work because I'm not going to teach. I'm dropping out. Besides, I like to be home with children. I went to UBC and started my master's that summer while he was with the children. I realized I was going to leave him. It was a perfect cover. I had been teaching night school, English second language, and there I was, perfectly turned out in the little gray wool suit. Altar guild of the Anglican Church, and I think one of the main distribution points in those years for grass and hash in Kelowna, Kelowna was small, was our basement. One can lead a bit of a strange life, but this was beyond it. So I realized Douglas was not going to go back to teaching. I mean, he at that point, his eyes had gone strange. Whatever relationship we had was gone. And he said, well, here's your chance. You always were, you know, uptight and academic, and I just want to play with the kids and explore my mind, which he did and is still doing, as a matter of fact. Lives on a little Gulf Island. And It has estranged him from his children. I guess the good thing about it is that his children, seeing what drugs do to a beloved person, have never, ever had anything to do with drugs. Mm. And they know who their father is and what it did to his life. Then the real kicker, at UBC that summer, taking these courses and getting back in and doing my usual thing, overworking and so forth, realizing I was going into full-time high school teaching because, you know, my work had been recognized when I was doing night school with adults, and I was immediately offered a position teaching full-time in the high school here in Kelowna. Mm. So I knew I was going back to that, knew about the drugs, and, you know, what was I going to do? Well, there was another teacher from Kelowna on the same floor in the residence. A woman who was gay, knew she was gay, I guess liked me, saw I was in a tough spot, and after about 2 weeks when we were talking, looked at me and said, you're going to have to leave him, you know. I said, I'm realizing that. I said, at least I have a career and I have a job and I can support them. And she said, I'd like to be father to your children and your partner. But that was the beginning, and that was my first full-scale lesbian experience, because she had been in relationships, and she knew how two women made love. And wow, all of a sudden, the black and white of human touch became kaleidoscopic, rainbow-colored, the whole thing. Wow. But then there was so much intensity because all these other things were on in my life. And I knew if my 7-year-old and 9-year-old were going to have a life and be supported and have a caring parent, I was it. Mm. So the whole thing turned out to be more complicated than that. She said, in Kelowna, of course, we cannot live together. Besides, I'm already living with a landlady, an older woman, and this works for me, but I have a lot of freedom to come and go, so I can still spend time with you. So that went on for 8 years.
Mm. When did that begin?
1971. Mm. Mm. She said, you realize we'd both lose our jobs, so we can only meet surreptitiously and maybe have a holiday together if you manage to find care for your children. And that's what happened. Mm. We didn't have much of a relationship, obviously. I had no help with the raising of my children. They almost never spent any time with their father, and then that ended completely. And then I had 200 English students, and so did she. Mm.
That's a lot of marking.
A lot of marking, exactly. So we spent very little time. It was the highlight of the week. If we could sit in a car somewhere with a takeout coffee and talk about our week, or be on the phone if her landlady went out. Mm. She used to say her landlady would kick her out if she knew that she loved a woman. Mind you, at the end of the 8 years, I discovered there was something going on between the landlady and Linda. I was an innocent. I absolutely did not know. She covered it so totally. And this was a much older woman. Mm-hmm. So that was my first real relationship. Mm-hmm. I would have moved in with her in a flash if I had thought we wouldn't both be fired. She was very good with young people. My two children loved her, didn't understand why they could see Linda only for a couple hours a week. She had been a phys ed teacher also, was very outgoing, loved to play games. She would have been a terrific co-parent to those children. As far as our relationship, we didn't share enough that it would have lasted forever. But she wanted to be a parent. And this would have met her needs in an open society. We probably would have been together until my children went to university. Mm. And then I know she would have gone off to lead her life and I mine, because we were not soulmates in the ways that last.
Did your kids have any inkling of the nature of your relationship, do you think? How did you hide the physical aspects from them?
The physical aspects occurred, for example, if I had to have a day off with migraines. I battled migraines all those years. Mm. Linda would have an hour off from her teaching and come to the house for her lunch break. That's the kind of thing it was. Mm. I later learned, just before my daughter was married, that she had always known and had such a warm and positive feeling for Linda and thought I was a great parent that she was willing to accept it, but had a real struggle knowing how her friends would feel about it. The fact that she was an outgoing, socially popular student council type herself and totally and supremely confident of her own sexuality made things much easier. And the fact I was a popular teacher made things easier. It was a big high school. There were 100 teachers.
This is take two of an interview being conducted by Karen Duder with the date is the 29th of May, 1998. Denise, you described yourself, if I recall correctly, as a girly girl.
Yes.
So very feminine, were you?
Feminine in terms of my interests. I was never well coordinated. I have tiny little wrists and basically no strength. I was always the last one chosen for the baseball team or whatever. My father called me a house cat as I was growing up and would say, get outside, get in the air, go and play. You're such a house cat. You're always reading. And I think the subtext was, in part he thought that was being a good parent, but in part was he wanted a bit of alone time without a kid in the house, you know, and that's fair enough. So from that point of view, I was, quote, a girly girl, but I didn't ever have particular interest in clothes, and I didn't wear ruffles and flounces and all that kind of thing.
Mm. Would you have gone the other way, and was your clothing in any way masculine, or how would you describe it?
Not maybe masculine, but I've always liked the clean-cut look. And maybe part of that is the fact that genetically I'm an Icelander, a Scandinavian, and the clean lines without fussy detail, the tailored blouse, the slacks, the simple skirt. That's always been my idea of attractive dress.
Mm. When you were growing up, did you wear pants?
As soon as it was allowed, girls couldn't wear dresses or skirts to school, could only wear dresses and skirts to school until I was in, I believe, ninth grade. Mm-hmm. If the temperature were below minus 30, then you can wear your slacks, but preferably you take them off in the washroom once you reach school.
Hmm. What about after you had left school? So, I suppose So that would have been after the war, when pants were becoming that little bit more acceptable for women to wear. Did you wear pants a lot when, say, when you were at university?
Yes, I did. Mm. Yes, I did. I would also wear a simple skirt and a blouse. Mm. But I liked wearing pants because then I could wear really comfortable shoes. I discovered very early, the first time I ever put them on, heels, they're terrible. My feet aren't built for heels. I didn't like the impression of teetering around. I like to be able to walk easily where I'm going. And it just seemed unfair that women, to be attractive, were supposed to wear these things. And I disliked that from the very beginning.
Did anyone, your parents, anybody else ever try to suggest that you might dress more in a more feminine fashion?
No. It just wasn't an item of interest at all.
Did you wear any makeup?
A bit of lipstick, and then because I always have had the tendency to a rather shiny, if not red, nose. Apparently it is a condition. I look as if I've had a drink or two often, and I haven't at all. I guess the blood vessels are close to the surface. But I soon began wearing just a touch of powder, or a, what do they call it then? Pancake makeup.
Oh.
Just to take away the shine and a bit of redness from my nose. Mm. I just couldn't be bothered with all the rest of it. I mean, I could be writing an English essay or doing an article for the school paper. Oh, yes, in those days, I also was the person who sent in the school news to the Edmonton paper and had a bit of a byline and all that kind of thing. There were always 10 other things to do, and it just wasn't interesting to me.
Mm.
So that's all the makeup I ever wore. I've also always had a problem with my eyes, and when I thought it would be fun to try a bit of eye makeup, I think the second time I put it on, my eyes watered and twitched. And that was it. I have never worn mascara, eyeshadow, any of those things since.
Mm. Did you smoke? Did you used to smoke?
No. My father was a smoker. It just never really came up. I tried it when I was with a group of people, all of whom smoked, when I was in my late 30s. But I would sort of forget to smoke. I think I actually bought a package of cigarettes, and I'd light one, and then I'd get busy doing something else, and there's the cigarette. I guess in that sense, I don't have an addictive personality. Mm. I can become addicted to a person, but not to any substance, you know, not to alcohol, not to cigarettes, anything.
Was there recreational drinking in your social circle?
A glass of sherry to go with shortbread at Christmas was about the extent of it through my teen years.
Mm. So and so you got to have a glass of sherry once a year. Mm.
That was about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, nobody drank.
Mm. And did you, when you were a teenager, did you go out to school dances or anything like that?
Yes. Mm. Yes, I did. Especially, say, grade 12, when I was dating less. I was always glad when they were over, and I was so glad to get home, and I would feel so tired and so sort of restless and dissatisfied inside, as if to say, you know, this is supposed to be the pinnacle of life. I mean, these are the teen years, and there I am at the prom, and why doesn't it feel good? And if this is the best, I'm not sure I want any of the rest of it if this is the best. It just wasn't a lot of fun.
Did he ever try to push things physically beyond a comfortable point for you, or was
he? Mm. No, I was 16, he was 20, then 21. You'd think it would happen. But he said early on that he respected me and it was my company that he liked. And especially if we were going to go on to marry, he was more than willing to wait. He'd had plenty of the other kind of girl.
Mm.
So luckily that wasn't a problem.
Mm. What kind of curfew did you have? Did you have to be home by a certain time when you were out with him? Or?
No, it didn't really come up, partly because
sounds terrible, but my parents really weren't all that interested. And they also knew that my driving force was to be tops academically, and they knew my schedule and my list, and that it would be marked in the next day, that from 6 a.m. to 6:30 I'd be memorizing for the physics exam, and on it would go. And they knew I'd be completely exhausted and out of it long before there'd be a curfew problem. Mm. I've been a morning person all my life. The pumpkin appears about 9 p.m. and I don't think I say much that's coherent after that.
Did anybody comment on the age difference between you?
No, I was always the youngest one in the class anyway. Mm. And it didn't seem to be a problem. Mm. And we just dated that one year, though the next year I was with an even older person when I was 17. But maybe people instinctively knew that these were not the really important relationships in my life. Mm.
You've talked about the man you eventually married not being as macho, if you like. Mm-hmm. What about the type of woman you were attracted to? Was there a particular type of woman in terms of her qualities or her appearance who really inspired passion in you?
Certainly not any very feminine woman. A woman who was bright, achieving well academically. I'm thinking of a med student I really liked. Though mostly it was the older women. Come to think of it, the ones that I cared for, almost every one, had short, naturally wavy hair, probably taught PE or had interests along that line, and yet was something of a reader also, and moved with some grace, and yet not the extremely butch person. Mm-hmm. No. A woman who was competent and could drive a car and didn't feel particularly there was a need for a man to, quote, look after her. Come to think of it, until meeting my real partner, I was never with a woman who had children or wanted them. Mm. And the women that I was really attracted to had never married. Interesting. Hmm.
Had you ever seen any of the very butch women at that time? Had you ever seen anyone who was clearly very masculine?
Not until I was at university from about 1971 on the campus at UBC. Hmm. And certainly I'd be attracted to the person in terms of wanting that person as a friend. And yet in terms, I'm thinking of Linda, for example, I think now people who are aware that there are gay women in the world would pretty quickly be sure that Linda was gay. There wouldn't be much doubt. But she was not extremely masculine. Mm. And she did wear lipstick and even a bit of scent. Mm. And enjoyed that, and often wore skirts.
Mm-hmm. So would I be correct in assuming then that during that pre-1965 period, you did not venture into, for example, any bars at which lesbian women congregated?
I don't think there was one in Edmonton. Mm. Wouldn't that have been nice? I know there are now. I still remember when I attended the first Gazebo Connection dance, and this would be about 75 or so, maybe it was even later, in Vancouver, the group of professional gay women. And here was a room with 100, 150 women like me, women who obviously are sort of solid citizens, make their way in the world, honor their commitments, make lists. But they're gay. And it just felt so good to be among them. Didn't matter that I didn't know them. just that they were there and these were my people. Here's where I belonged all along. If I had met a group like that when I was in high school or before I married, I am certain I would never have married. Mm. I would have found a woman who also wanted a child, and we would have gone from there.
Mm. I wonder if I can ask you then some questions about how it felt, knowing how you felt about women, mm-hmm. to be in that situation before the 70s, to be in a situation when you didn't know that there could be a community. Can you remember how that felt?
It felt that this is what society demanded and required, and that if one wanted a family, touch, connection, a community, there was one way to get it, and that is you married.
Mm-hmm.
And there were enormous societal benefits to being married, to be invited out as a couple, to have some touch in your life, to become a mother. And I'm one of those gay women who really wanted to become a mother. Just enormous benefits. And not even the idea that there could be the alternate, and for me, the natural way to have some of those benefits.
Mm.
I didn't know there was a community of gay women. And in Edmonton, before 1961, I'm not sure there was, or if it existed, it was hidden totally from me and from anyone I could connect with.
Mm. Did you ever wonder if there were other people like you?
I thought there was something wrong with me.
Mm.
And there was some empirical evidence that maybe there would be, that I was so intense and so high-strung and so focused that I did have a complete breakdown with this episode I mentioned with tachycardia and then hospitalized for depression and so forth in my late teens. So I thought, okay, you know, this is me. I have to adjust to society.
Mm.
But if someone had said to me, you know, it could be possible, there is another way to live in the world, then I think the years and years I had on antidepressants and the breakdowns I had and all the things that happened, it could have been, I'm not saying necessarily would have been, a completely different life.
Mm.
Because I'd be a fish in the ocean instead of a fish flopping around on the land, which is the best I can be in any marriage.
Mm.
I realize this is particularly to do with pre-65, but you're aware I did marry a second time.
Mm-hmm.
And things didn't change a whole lot. I had had relationships with people, even one that was a live-in for a period of time. It was unstable. Almost every lesbian couple I knew, and I knew quite a few by then, they broke up. There were affairs on the side. They never did keep a home together. And most of them were, how do I put this? Most of the ones that I met were pretty strange people. And by strange, I mean you couldn't count on them not to make a scene. They weren't the list-keeping, obligation-fulfilling, we have to be part of society sort of people. And it had been so hard. And another sort of wild card is that my daughter became very ill. Up to this point, she's had, I think it's 14 surgeries. I was her support. And on top of all that, it was just more than I could handle. And then I went into chronic fatigue and another depressive episode. So when I met Rob, 17 years older, we talk about things, partners of mine, I'm alone now. Your life isn't going well. You need someone just to help with the details of things. But we can't live in this community under one roof and not be married. Well, I owned a nice town home and I had the furniture and Rob had just retired here. It just seemed like a relief at the time.
Mm.
Just a relief. It was too much on my own. And we lived together under one roof for 10 years, but he always knew and always said someday I would meet a partner. He would be fully supportive and he would know we could probably no longer live together. But in the meantime, my companionship had meant a lot to him. And sure enough, it happened, and he's our greatest supporter. He's 70, almost 77 now, and we sort of look out for one another in that sense, though it's in me now looking out for Rob. And he continues to live in my townhouse, and I have no trouble with that.
It's a great arrangement.
I think for all of us right now.
That's a lot of change. I mean, that's that's a lot of change in what, in the grand scheme of things, is a relatively short space of time, even though it might sometimes feel like a hell of a long space of time.
Right.
How do you think... Has your relationship to yourself changed throughout that change? Has there been any fundamental change in the way you have felt about your sexuality or conceived of it?
The major change occurred when I met and realized we were going to be together. My feeling of being a stable, grounded, rooted person who's not going to let herself down by going into another depression or by living with suicidal thoughts and all those things. For the first time, I can count on myself, and I can look anyone in the eye and feel I'm not just pretending to be a contributing member of society and to be a stable person. I really am. And I know I put on a pretty good show all those years, and my son and daughter say that I was a great parent, and I guess it was up to thousands of English teachers say I did a great job, but oh, the price and what I felt like inside. I felt like a phony. I felt as if I was sitting a foot away from my right shoulder watching myself do everything and sort of trying to advise myself on what to do because it never felt natural. I was always acting the role. And it's only now that I live with a partner that I'm not acting anymore. I am who I am. I feel real. I like myself better than I ever have. Mind you, a lot of the pressures are gone. I'm no longer teaching. I no longer have a son or daughter at home. Still a close connection because my daughter's health is still an issue. But I'm in their lives, and we want to be in the lives of children and grandchildren. But for the first time, I can be real. I'm not living through a script anymore. I'm an actual person. I no longer would be enormously relieved to learn I had a terminal illness. And I've been like that since I was 10. If anyone at any point through all those years, even when I was a young mother, even when I thought I was, relieved to be in a stable relationship, all those things, there is no point in my life I can remember until last December that I would have not said to myself, oh, isn't that wonderful? Whew. If someone said, you have a terminal illness. In fact, when after cataract surgery, I probably had a small stroke at that time, and I had problems with my right side, the doctor thought was quite possibly a brain tumor. When the results of the scan came back, and I was told, it's clear it must have just been to do with the surgery, I was devastated. My impulse was to drive my van into a tree, and that just came from the depths of me somewhere. I've worked so hard and so long at trying to live in this world. Other people have an escape hatch. Why not me? That's not fair. And now, that's the last thing on my mind. If we have 20 years, 30 years, I would think that was a gift. And I don't care if we have good health as long as we're both alive. That's a total new me. But, when I think... of that death wish that was close enough to the surface that I was often consciously aware of it. at least from age 10, and most assuredly all through the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, and right up until last November. You know, it would be buried for a period of time, but never for so for long. It's been damn hard work acting something I'm not.
Hmm. Is that only in the sense of your sexuality, or are there other things in there that where you felt you were acting as well?
But you see, to me, sexuality has to do with all of life. It has to do with making the list together, yeah, with inviting people over, with absolutely everything we do. It's the total being, and the actual sexual acts that are part of it are very important, but they're part of a whole. And for me to be in a primary relationship with a man, no matter how good a person, no matter how much we share, it just isn't there. The emotional connection isn't there. And I have to act. And something inside me was crying all those years. And I just thought that was me. I often thought to myself, you know, it was a mistake. I was a mistake. And luckily I had a quick mind, and I had a lot of maybe integrity, and I wanted to give something to others. And so maybe I've done some good things for some good people, but oh my God, I'll be glad when it's over and I don't have to work so hard. You know? I just thought that's the way I was, and that's the way life was.
Mm.
So to find a partner and start living in every sense, from the smallest detail, as the gay woman, the lesbian that I am, that's a whole new way of being. Mm. And I'm 62. No, I'm 52. 62 is 62. I'm 59. I'll be 60 in September. We're that identified. I mean, I guess that is a pretty profound comment on what it's been like me. Now, my personality, my history, all those things are part of it, I know. I'm sure that I didn't have this death-seeking part of myself only because I was a gay woman trying to live in a straight world. I'll never know if those feelings would have vanished forever if I had found when I was 18. My guess is that, yes, they would have been gone.
Mm.
I would have found my people. I'll never know.
Well, I'm not sure that I have any more questions, but is there anything else that you would like to add about what you think about romance, sexuality, the mysteries of courting?
Just that it's pure joy when you have the right person. And I was aware that all the other relationships that I tried to make work, I would sort of hang on to the bits of and the parts that were all right, that were enough to keep me there, and put up with all the rest of it, that what didn't seem right for me. But I just realize profoundly now how different it is when there's a partnership. Now, I know these are, quote, early days, but I know. I mean, we laugh about how similar we are, and yet we're different enough that there's plenty of growth. We're at the growing edge all the time. We're both Unitarian mystics, and I know that takes us in a whole other area. We're both leading workshops and leading services, and we're reading everything. You see the books and magazines piled all over the place. But we're also interested in politics, in wildflower identification, I mean, you name it, right across the board.
Mm.
And to share this with someone, and most of all, to know that it's okay to be who you really are, and to look anyone in the eye and say, no, doesn't matter what male comes along, being with a male isn't where it's at for me, not in any sense.
Mm.
Men friends, yes, though our best men friends are either gay or so gay positive, such as that they get cross with us if we are so conservative and cautious out there that no one would ever guess we were partners. I mean, it's who gets upset if, say, there's an invitation to a wedding that comes to one. He said, you can't do that. You get back to these people and you say, we're a couple. You don't invite one of us. I mean, this is, he's teaching us how to do it. And I guess that's about it. Mm. That I'm glad I hung on and lived long enough to realize that it's okay to be who I am, genetically. I'm convinced that for whatever reason, I was born to live as a woman with a woman. It's that simple. I can't think of any conditioning that particularly changed that. I don't think any family or any circumstance I could have been born into. Let's suppose I'd had a warm, involved, nurturing mother and two or three sisters and a big extended family. Sure, I would have had a different life, but I think I would have been exactly who I am now in terms of the lifestyle that brings me fulfillment. Mm. And that's it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Karen.